Welcome to our new podcast series, Accessing Justice, which is hosted by Communicourt. During this series, we're going to be talking to a number of guests about how fair access to justice really is for people with communication difficulties. Joining us for our next episode, we're really excited and grateful to welcome Sanchita Hasali, Director of the British Institute for Human Rights and Trustee at Centre for Women's Justice. Sanchita is a key driver in making sure policy changes maintain and progress human rights protections in the UK. Sanchita Hasali, welcome to Accessing Justice, and thank you so much for finding the time to talk to us today.
Really pleased to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's okay. To start things off, we all might think we know what they are, but what are human rights?
That is an excellent question, and one we spend quite a lot of time on at BIHR. So I think there is an instinctive feeling that people have about human rights. So we feel like there's something to do with justice or equality or dignity or fair treatment. But actually, when you kind of unpick that and start to ask questions about, but what does that actually mean? How do you make those meaningful and real for people? Then I think a little bit of actually what we understand human rights to be falls down a bit. So I think that it's really important that we do kind of take a step back and say, what are human rights and how do they work? Now, whole PhDs can be written about what human rights are, and there's lots of kind of philosophical and moral debates about that. But as legal standards, which is what we work to at BIHR, we really see human rights as something that emerged from the Second World War, and their function was to say, actually, never again can governments have unbridled power to treat people however they want. So we need a set of standards that are for all people and that are the rule book for how those with governmental or state or public power treat those people. So human rights are really just about people and power. They're about making sure that there are some set standards that ensure that everyone is treated with equal dignity and respect, no matter who they are, and that there is that rule book, both for big government, but also for all of those other kind of ways that we bump into public power, like courts, like social workers, like doctors, like nurses. So that kind of rule book about how we should all be treated.
So how does this apply to people with communication difficulties, for example, autistic people, people with mental health difficulties or learning difficulties?
Again, this is a question that comes up quite a bit in our work at BIHR. So we work quite a lot with autistic people, with people with learning disabilities or difficulties, people with mental health difficulties. Something I often say is one of the beauties and challenges of human rights is that they apply to everybody. So they apply to all people equally. We don't have different standards for different people based on who we are, kind of, you know, what issues or barriers we might face. Actually, everyone has the same human rights. And that can be challenging because it means that human rights are for people that you like and people like you. And they're for people that you don't like and people who aren't like you. And a really famous case that went to the UK Supreme Court, Baroness Hale, who was the former president of that court, she said that human rights, they might sometimes have to be restricted or limited in some situations, but the starting point should be the same for everybody. And that case was particularly about the rights of a group of disabled people. And I think that's really important. The starting point is the same for everyone.
So how did you find yourself working in this area and what inspired your career path?
I always find that a really challenging question to answer. someone asked me that quite recently. I was doing some leadership training for around special educational needs and disabilities, and someone asked me the same question. And I kind of had a bit of a, you know, tell them everything and that kind of goes behind that. But I think it's lots of different things. I think growing up as a mixed race child in a very racially divided area of London, and not conforming to kind of sexist stereotypes about what a girl should do. You know, I started the first girls football club in my primary school and all of these things. So I was always really interested in equality and social justice. And quite early on in my life, I saw the power of the law and how if you don't know your rights, you're at a real disadvantage. So I kind of decided to study law at university. Had to work really hard to get there. My nobody else in my family had been to university. And then when I got there, I kind of discovered this idea of human rights, and the Human Rights Act, which is our law in the UK, was actually being discussed in Parliament at the time I went to university. And I saw, actually, there's this law that is about all of us and that brings together all of those different experiences of disadvantage and discrimination that I've experienced, the people I know have experienced, and things that I don't have experience of. And it says, actually, there is a line about how we should all be treated, and there is accountability that we should all be able to access. So that's kind of what took me sort of on that career path. And I think over the last 20 years, I've done what probably most human rights lawyers don't do, which is I started off internationally, and I've become very sort of narrow in my focus to work in the UK. And I think lots of people think the dream career is to work internationally, and that's for lots of people it is, and that's great. But for me, I was very much internationally, we can write laws down, but actually where the change happens, that's local, that's domestic, and that's what I want to focus on.
So how do we ensure that everyone's human rights are protected?
Yeah, a big question. I mean, essentially the whole reason my organisation, VHR, exists, to try and be part of that puzzle. I think the key thing that we really focus on is knowledge. And it's, I know people say, you know, knowledge is power a lot, but we say it a lot at VHR. Because the starting point is, if we don't actually know what our human rights are, and we don't know what the legal duties on bodies to uphold our rights are, then we can't have them protected. So really kind of just that basic starting point of everyone knowing what their rights are, and also those who have duties to uphold human rights knowing what they are. And really kind of what we focus on at VHR is actually prevention over cure. And I think when we talk about human rights protection, it's really easy to think about going to court when someone's rights have been breached already. And at that point, it's too late because the person's rights have already been breached. So thinking about that prevention approach. So how do we think about human rights when we're making decisions that impact people's lives so that we don't breach them? And that's the kind of model that we try to work with at VHR. But it is a big issue. I have a law degree, I'm a lawyer, but you can quite easily graduate from law school never having studied human rights as a topic. So the expectation that we as individuals know what our rights are, and that all of the kind of professionals who have duties to uphold our rights know what they are, is not really realistic in the way we're set up at the moment as a country. So that kind of knowledge base really, really, really needs building. And that's the kind of vital key to unlocking how we protect human rights.
And part of the Human Rights Act is the right to a fair trial. We're looking at how people with a wide range of communication issues access justice when they are the defendant. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges people face in the criminal justice system?
Again, but I'm sure you could write many PhDs about that question. I think from a human rights perspective, there's a lot about actually understanding what the right to a fair trial encompasses and what it covers. So we have this notion of fair trial rights in kind of English law, goes back a long, long way. But actually with the writing of the European Convention, which is where the rights in our Human Rights Act come from, just in 1950, and then our Human Rights Act in 1998, we now have a specific bit of law. And the right to a fair trial is one of the few absolute rights in the Human Rights Act, which I think maybe people don't always realise. So restrictions of it are very, very rarely permitted. And it's also a really detailed right, which again, I think people don't necessarily realise. And it sets out all of the different safeguards that people should have access to ensure that they have a fair hearing, but then additional protections if they're involved in criminal proceedings. So I think one of the biggest issues is actually just ensuring that each of those elements of the right to a fair trial are not just on paper, but actually are in practice. And that means knowing what the right covers. It means that public bodies knowing what they have to do in order to uphold that right. And I think it's really interesting that courts are actually the only named authority in the Human Rights Act. It says courts and other public authorities. So we know for sure that courts definitely have this duty around upholding human rights. But it's also about when we develop the processes and the new policies and the new approaches in the criminal justice system, very often that's done without any recognition of what the right to a fair trial involves and therefore how we can make sure that it's upheld. So I think there are really, really significant issues, and a big part of that is because we're not thinking about a human rights approach in the way that we not just make the daily decisions in courts and court structures and the criminal justice structure, those are really important for people's experiences, but also in the way we organise the system and we try to reform the system or try to improve it.
And you've already touched upon it, but how important is the right to a fair trial to individuals with communication difficulties?
Well, I think it's vital. And I think it's also, for me, thinking about this question, it's also about how the rights interconnect. So if we look at something like in the right to a fair trial, there's the safeguard around people having access to relevant information. Well, if you have communication difficulties or specific communication needs, that if you don't receive information in a way that you can understand, how have you got access to the relevant information? And then kind of following on from that, how can you make any decisions about, you know, how your defence should run, what you want to do, the decisions you want to make? So there's a huge potential impact. But I think linking it to the other rights is also really important. So there's a right to non-discrimination in the Human Rights Act, and that's what lawyers like to call a conjunctive right. I tend to call it a piggyback right. You just piggyback it onto some of the other rights. And that the right to a fair trial and the right to non-discrimination, I think, is really important for people with communication issues who are involved in the criminal justice system, because the right to non-discrimination is actually about, it's not about whether everyone's treated equally badly. It's actually about ensuring that people aren't disadvantaged in accessing their rights, and so therefore sometimes may need additional supports or different approaches or different ways of doing things. So the right to a fair trial is vital for anyone involved in the criminal justice process and other processes, because it's quite a broad right. But I think when you're thinking about particularly people with communication needs, bringing in that right to non-discrimination and actually having a really strong human rights basis from which to say there need to be different approaches here to ensure that this person's rights are upheld is really important.
And if they don't have access to fair justice, how are they affected by this?
Yeah, I mean, the effects can be huge, right? So just going back to the point that I made about people having access to relevant information as being one of the safeguards. If you don't have access to relevant information in a process, a criminal justice process that you're involved in, what does that then mean for how you might plead in a case? And you know, it's very well known that many people will plead to a charge because they're concerned about whether or not they're going to be able to prove that they haven't done something in court. But that could have a huge effect if you don't understand the information being put to you. You might feel like you have to give a plea one way or the other, which doesn't actually kind of compute with what actually happened. And there are all sorts of other issues. You know, how do you instruct your lawyers? How do you be involved in the process itself? How do you give evidence? How do you tell your side of the story? So not having that access to a fair process and to justice could have huge impacts on the outcome of that criminal justice process for that person. And that could be from, you know, the really extreme in terms of, you know, actually being detained and ending up in a prison sentence when maybe they might not have if they'd understood the information, or if the information had been given to them in a way they could understand. And then also the knock-on effects that those sorts of decisions will have for people's lives, their kind of livelihoods, their work, their family. So not having access to justice can have a huge, huge impact on people's lives.
CommuniCourt works with people with communication difficulties within the justice system and beyond. Our role is to ensure people can understand and actively participate in the process therein. To make a referral or find out more about what we do, visit www.communicourt.co.uk.
And when researching your work, we noticed your involvement with the Fair Hearing Conference. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was a great conference that was organised by the law firm Lee Day. They're a solicitors firm who do quite a lot of human rights based work, do a lot of work around learning disabilities, autism, mental health issues. And so they convened a conference back in the days when we could have big conferences and big groups of people. And it was a really interesting day because it was really focused on justice as a really broad concept, both kind of within justice systems, but how we achieve justice every day as well, and really focused on people with learning disabilities and autistic people. And what it did was bring together people with lived experience, so people themselves who have been seeking justice, their family members and carers, together with legal experts and other people involved in different justice systems in the UK, to actually talk about the barriers and the challenges and to really understand them, and to kind of say, you know, actually we have almost different types of access to justice happening here depending on whether people need additional support, and that can't be right in a decent democracy like ours, that we should all have a standard access to justice. So it was great because it was actually that combination of lived experience and legal expertise coming together.
And you stated people with learning disabilities and or autism are not inherently vulnerable. They are put in situations that make them vulnerable to breaches of their rights to safety, choice, and participation. So how can we protect the human rights of autistic people and those with learning disabilities in the criminal justice system?
Yes, I mean, that's something I think I say quite a lot. I think something we try and move away from at BIHR is this use of vulnerable people. And I know in a criminal justice context, that's quite difficult because vulnerability is a legal term that's used in lots of the processes. But I think if we focus on people as being vulnerable, it then becomes about them. Whereas if we focus on the system or the situation making them vulnerable, we focus on what we can do to address that vulnerability. And I think that's incredibly important in general life and context, but in a criminal justice system particularly, because it's about what is happening in the process that is making that person vulnerable. Because actually somebody with access to the right information in a way that they can understand is not vulnerable. It's not getting the information in a way that they can understand that makes them vulnerable. So thinking about protecting the human rights of autistic people and people with learning difficulties in the criminal justice system, I feel like I'm probably being a bit repetitious, but it is going back to that point of we actually need to name that vulnerability and use the language of human rights. We need to think about that knowledge issue, but also that integration of it into the way that we make our decisions, the processes that we put in place, the policies that we put in place, and also the challenges that we make to bad decision making within the system itself. And I always find it really interesting that when a right is breached, we're much more comfortable to say this was a breach of that person's right to a fair trial. But when we're in the process of negotiating what that person needs, we're much more less likely to use human rights language. So we have this comfort with the language of breach, but not necessarily so much comfort with using human rights language to prevent that breach from happening. So I think that would be a key action to really think about. Actually, we name the breaches as human rights issues. So let's name what we want to do to challenge and prevent that with human rights language, and talk about the duty on courts and the other bodies in the criminal justice system to actually be upholding this right as part of the process, and also the broader rights, because I think that's another key part. The right to a fair trial is obviously fundamental to the issues that we're talking about today, but other rights will also be relevant. You know, there could be a situation, for example, where not providing somebody with the right communication support might end up leaving them, you know, in a particularly difficult situation with their physical and mental well-being, potentially even an inhumane situation. There might be issues around not being able to participate in decisions about you, which is about our Article 8 right to private life. So right to fair trial is fundamental, but also just bringing in each of those other elements of rights to really make us much more familiar with the language of rights, because we can't protect what we don't name.
So it's really important to look at it as a whole, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a whole approach. A lot of the time when we're working directly with organisations, either advocacy organisations or with public bodies or services or contracted organisations, is we say human rights isn't about doing something extra. It's about how you do what you're doing in a rights respecting way.
I think that's really good to hold in your mind. So what do you think is the biggest risk to human rights for individuals with learning difficulties or mental health problems?
I think this question makes me really sad, because I think the biggest risk is just not being seen as equal human beings. I think really that stems from the kind of disadvantage, the discrimination, the poor treatment, the neglect and the abuse that people suffer and experience. I think it stems from not seeing people as equal human beings with equal rights, because if we did that, it would be so obvious that you wouldn't give somebody information about a vital life-changing situation in the criminal justice process that they can't understand, because you would think, well, if that was me, I couldn't understand that. So we don't apply that kind of level of equality, I think, and that, I think, sadly, is the biggest risk.
What do you think we can do more widely to encourage access to fair justice?
Well, I think there's something around encouraging access to fair justice. Is really a lot of what I've said around the idea of knowledge and talking the language of human rights, but also talking about why it's important as well. I think we need to really actually, I think, get back in touch with that sense of having fair processes is something to be proud about. It's not about individuals or crimes or issues that have taken place, but actually it's about saying fair justice is a value that in itself is something that we should be proud of and we should promote within this country. And I think that idea of this actually being about everyone, because it's about how we treat people, including the people that maybe we don't agree with or we don't like. And that's the hallmark, right, of a civilized society and the hallmark of human rights, because it's about everyone. So I think there's a lot in our kind of discussions, our public messaging and our conversations that we can talk about. This is about having the right processes in place to ensure that we live in a democracy that we can be proud of.
And your organisation proposes changes to policies and identifies gaps. What is the response of those listening?
Yes, what is the response? So it's an interesting one, because we're a charity, so we don't have any specific levers. So we have no statutory power. We're not a kind of a regulator or a monitoring body. But it's really interesting, actually, because I think that there's a little bit of a disconnect around human rights in the UK. And I use the term UK broadly because I think it's probably a bit more England specific than maybe across the nations. But there's this disconnect that kind of at this big political level that human rights are almost a bit like health and safety gone too far. And that's always the elephant in the room. And it's really important to confront that. And actually, when you have conversations with those agencies and organisations and their staff and you unpick what human rights are, all of a sudden there's like a light bulb moment of, oh, actually, this is like quite basic stuff that most people can agree with. So we have that on the one hand. But then on the other hand, at BIHR, we are busier than we have ever been in terms of working with different organisations, different public bodies and agencies, because what we focus on is the practical value that human rights bring. So not just as like a law or a litigation tool, but actually, what does it mean to treat people with dignity and respect? And actually, kind of, we're talking here about organisations that are doing public services, that are public bodies, and the idea of those bodies is not every day we go to work and breach people's rights. There are public service values which are about access are about kind of having a certain level of kind of standard and decency. And so we can kind of connect to that and actually talk kind of much more around what do human rights look like in a practical way. And that's the real key for unlocking work with organisations and agencies, because this is human rights, and the Human Rights Act, particularly in the UK, is a tool for how we can make sure that we are getting the best outcomes possible. And that's essentially what everyone's here to do anyway. So interestingly, despite the big sort of political debate, actually talking about practical changes and changes to policies and processes and supporting organisations to skill up their staff, we're seeing a really kind of positive response at BIHR.
And what do you think is needed now to improve access to justice for people with communication difficulties, including autistic people and those with learning difficulties or poor mental health?
So thinking about that, I think I can probably distill everything I've said into three things, which is accessible information, which is accessible for people at their point of need, not the convenience of those who are producing it. Advocacy and support, which is about taking that information and making it real and challenge, and actually doing the brave work of speaking up. And then a commitment from those who have duties under the Human Rights Act to the public bodies to actually meet their legal duty and uphold rights across all of their decision making, policies and approaches. So just a few things, really, just some small jobs.
Thank you so much to Sanchita for giving up some of her time to talk to us. If you have enjoyed this podcast series, please let us know on Twitter or LinkedIn. You can find out more about our Accessing Justice series by visiting www.communicourt.co.uk. Thank you for listening.